Good morning. I want to thank all of those that prayed on my behalf while I was out of town in Alabama for that meeting. Good group, good meeting. Got a chance to spend quite a bit of time discussing God's Word with numerous people there, and so that obviously is a productive and a good meeting from my standpoint. And certainly you could ask them. They may have opinions otherwise, but you could ask them. And years to come will probably really tell whether or not it's a good meeting or not. Do we continue to change our lives the way that God would have us to change our lives? I want you to open, if you would, to Hebrews chapter 11. It's a passage that is familiar to many of us. There are some great statements that are made regarding the idea of faith. And a lot of people that demonstrated faith, and you see some of the things that is that are said about these individuals. And we associate that faith with the individuals when it talks about the things that Abraham did when he offered his son Isaac, and when it talks about Moses, and it talks about some of the other people that are described as having this great faith. The statements aren't difficult necessarily to understand, because it talks about the people, and we think in terms of these people had great faith, and we understand the great faith that they had and the way that they followed God. But then there's a statement that is made a little bit later in the chapter that is one of those statements that is just, I don't want to say outlandish in the sense of unbelievable, but it goes along with what we talked about a couple of weeks ago in on a Wednesday night, when the question was asked, what does it mean that faith could move a mountain? And that's a very difficult passage when you think in terms of, could the mountain really be cast into the sea? Is that the point? It's just this incredible statement being made in a principle form. In other words, Jesus was teaching something, and he was teaching a principle. But then in Hebrews chapter 11, we see a statement that is made that is nearly as difficult to imagine or comprehend in our minds, but it's no longer a principle. It's something that actually happened. Not something that could, but something that did. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 30, the statement is made, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell after they were encircled for 7 days. So it's not by faith somebody did something, though we're going to see that they did. The statement is made, by faith, walls fell down. Well, that's a difficult thing on the surface, at least, to understand. We want to talk a little bit about that this morning as we think about that statement that is made in Hebrews chapter 11. And then, where's the application to us? What does that mean to us? How is it that even transpired on this particular occasion? So I want you to turn back, if you would, to Joshua chapter 24. And to think of the commitment that Joshua made regarding the idea of was the nation going to follow God the way that God wanted them to follow? Were they going to have the kind of faith that was necessary to bring about the things that God would say was going to happen? And so Joshua is going to ask for an incredible commitment from the children of Israel, and he's going to ask the children of Israel if they're willing to commit along with him. Are they going to have the faith that Joshua had? You remember, because this started way back when Joshua and Caleb went into the promised land initially, that Joshua and Caleb came out of the promised land and said, we can take this land. The others came out and said, these are the biggest people we have ever seen. There are giants in the land that we look like grasshoppers in their sight. And so they swayed the people as a whole, and Joshua and Caleb were holding on to this idea of, much the same as some of the other great people of faith, when David walked down into the valley against Goliath and thought in terms of, with God on our side, then Joshua and Caleb were saying, it really doesn't matter how big the people are. And so you get to the end of Joshua, and he's asking for a commitment from the people and says, as for me and my house, we're serving the Lord. And he asked the people if they're willing to commit to that. And the people all said they were willing to commit to that. And Joshua said, I don't think you are. He said, I don't think so. You don't understand what you're saying. And they recommitted. So what is the kind of faith that is necessary? What is it that we need to commit and understand about our faith, our trust, our belief system, if we're going to have the kind of faith that Joshua asked for from the people? Because Joshua was saying, this is a decision that has to be made right now. And that's always the case. Choose this day, Joshua said. It's a decision that is made right now. Am I going to follow God or am I not going to follow God? So think about what's going on with the city of Jericho. As they're going to walk in and they are going to attempt to take the promised land as God has told them that they can have, think about what it is that they're actually going to go through in regards to taking it. If you back up to Joshua chapter 6, you'll see that it tells us, starting off, Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. So as you think about possessing the promised land, let's just kind of go through the story first, and then we'll come back at the end and make the three points that we want to make. This is not an easy task that they're about to embark on. In Joshua chapter 6, as they're getting ready to go in and take the land that Joshua had way back when said, we can do this, and the others caused that wilderness wandering for some 40 years. What is that? What is that faith? What is it they were up against? And as you look at this city, I mean, Jericho's a city of a very critical nature. As they're looking from Gilgal, they can see Jericho. They can understand the direction that they're going. It's going to become very critical. I'm saying even strategically, it's going to become necessary to take Jericho if you're going to take the land. And Jericho's a very strategic point to go in. It's necessary to capture Jericho if you're going to begin to take the hill country. And almost as if God was driving a wedge between the north and the south, and you have Jericho, which is going to protect the beginning of this ascent, and then you're going to have Ai, which is going to be kind of at the crest of that ascent. And if you can take those two areas, then you can control the hill country, kind of divide a wedge between the north and the south, and you can start to possess the land that God has promised. It's a military fortress. This is not a city that was like a normal city. It was a city that was well protected. It says it was absolutely shut up. Nobody's going in. Nobody's coming out. These people are ready for a siege. When you look at the city of Jericho, it has a retaining wall, or it had a retaining wall, that was in the neighborhood of about 12 to 15 feet high. Kind of in other words, it's a mud wall. It's built up. It's supporting the main wall. On top of that was a wall that was 6 feet thick, estimated to be somewhere between 20 and 26 feet high. So this is the city you're walking toward as you're initially seeing Jericho. Inside the city was another wall system, similar to the one that was outside. The difference was, as Jericho is being built on this terrain that is already doing this, the inner wall is estimated to have had its base 46 feet above the ground level that was outside the outer wall. All right, so if you're starting to picture the height and what you're looking at as you see the wall as you're heading up toward Jericho, then we understand some things that are said about it. And we'll see that in a minute. The city is about 8.5 acres in size, the whole city. So that's going to give you a circumference around the city of give or take about 0.5 mile. So when you think about the Israelites walking around it, once a day, it's only 0.5 mile trek to get around this entire city, give or take. Now, obviously, it's not 0.5 mile on the track at the high school. The terrain's a little different, but it's not a large distance around this. But it's a huge fortress to look at. As you think about what was said in Deuteronomy chapter 9, God said to the people of Israel, it says, "Hear, O Israel, you're to cross over the Jordan today to go into dispossessed nations greater and mightier than you, cities great and fortified with walls up to heaven." Or the heavens, or some versions say the sky. But it's just saying, here's what you're going to find when you get there. You're going to find this huge fortress. You're going to look at it and think, this is incredible. I mean, as you're looking at these cities, and you're thinking about fortified cities with these huge walls. And so there's some things that they understand about that. But they're going to have to take this city. For different reasons, they're going to have to take this city. It's a city of pagan unbelief. And as were the other cities around it. And God, that's why God says, you're going to have to capture these cities and drive these people out of the nation if the people of Israel are ever going to be protected. It's a city of strategic importance. It has to be conquered in order to continue the battle. God has set this battle up as an initial battle, I believe, very intentionally as the people are going in to Israel because of what the city meant. So imagine that's what you see as you come up, something similar to that. An outer wall, an inner wall going up way, way higher than you're going to be able to scale. You're part of the Israel army. What are your chances? What makes you feel going in, this is something that we would be able to conquer without any real issue? And so there's some things that they needed to understand. One important fact first, and this was critical to everything that happens beyond that. One important fact. It is impossible for Israel to bring down the walls of Jericho. It's impossible. And I think God needs them to recognize that right away for the things to work the way that God needs them to work. Not only for the taking of Jericho, but for the continued taking and conquering of the land and for all things that they had to do. They needed to recognize something about the task that they were given. Think about how many times God did that for the nation of Israel. How many times he gave them tasks that were impossible to accomplish on their own. When you watch the incredible whittling away of the army of Gideon that he was going to use. The whole purpose of that was what? We're going to take 300 and go fight this large group of people. Why? So that you understand something about the battle. David, the little shepherd boy that goes down into the valley to fight Goliath. The whole point was what? That it wasn't David. That they needed to understand. David wasn't going to kill Goliath all on his own. I read a report recently on the strategic attack of David on Goliath, which was pretty interesting. It talked about how David was able to hit him in the kneecap and cause Goliath to fall. So that it was just incredible. And how he used these great military tactics to bring about the death of Goliath. The whole story misses its point if that's what happened. God wanted them to understand, you can't take down the walls of Jericho at all. Think about the plan. So as you go through Joshua 6 and you read about the plan of God, God tells us the gates are securely barred. And these people, we said, are ready for a siege. There's a spring inside of Jericho. Harvest has recently passed, so there's a good stock of food. They don't need to go in and out. They're pretty well self-sustained. It's not like God's going to have Israel encamp the group and say, you know what, if we just stay out here for 6 months, they'll have to come out because they'll be starving to death. God's going to use a different plan entirely. They're going to get a word from the Lord. He's going to say, so here's how we're going to do this. He says, we're going to march around the city. We're going to blow horns. Then on the last day, we're going to shout. So I'm just saying, if you're one of the children of Israel, what's going through your mind? God says, all right, we've got a plan to take this city, guys. We're going to march around it one time a day for 7 days. And then we're going to have the priest blowing the horns the whole time we're marching around it. And then on the seventh day, we're just going to let out a shout. And so in your mind, you're thinking, so that equals what? To me, that equals a lot of noise. Then Joshua is going to talk to the people, and he's going to add a few things. I don't know if you ever thought about it. Once Joshua talks to him, Joshua says, we're going to put some soldiers in front of the priest who are in front of the Ark of the Covenant. And then we're going to have some soldiers behind the Ark of the Covenant as well, walking around the city. And then Joshua says, and you're not to say a single word to the nation of Israel. He says, you are to be absolutely silent as you walk around the city. Priests are blowing horns, but the nation of Israel, he says, you aren't saying anything. And so as you walk around day one, what do you think? You ever think about that kind of stuff? What? You're one of the Israelites. As you walk around day two and day three and day four, and you're saying nothing at all, do you think the people inside Jericho are saying nothing? Oh, no. I've always had a picture of the people in Jericho up on the wall hurling down insults and saying things about the children of Israel and, you know, making, and you're listening to all this and you're walking around the city over and over. Day five. Day six. What are you thinking? What's going to actually happen? And then on day seven, he says, when you go around on day seven, all the people are going to shout. I don't know how many people in here have structural engineering backgrounds, but I'm guessing there's not a structural engineer in the world that would say, I like this plan. You know what? I'm thinking that is exactly the right amount of days, and then the horns blowing for six, and then the shouting. That the walls will be so unstable by that point, they are just bound to fall. Who's there thinking this is a great plan? And understanding the purpose of God. And they're told, the word from God says, and then the walls are going to fall down. And then you're going to go in and you're going to take the city. Just repeatedly, silently, one day at a time. Marching, plus horns, plus shouting, plus what? Plus God. That was the point. Why is the Ark of the Covenant there? Why are you carrying the Ark of the Covenant around the wall all these days? I think that's an indication to the children of Israel, God is there with them as they walk around the walls. God is in their midst, and that's what is important for them to understand. And so marching plus horns plus shouting plus God equals victory. And that was what they needed to understand. But it says, by faith the walls fell. They couldn't see exactly what was going to happen, but God had promised that he had given the city to them. He said, see, I have given it into your hands. So what do we learn from that? And that really is the question. Three quick points, and the lesson is yours. I just want us to understand what's happening first so that we can understand how critical the nature of these things as regards to our faith are in order to see God work in our lives. So what's it take? What kind of faith destroys fortresses? When there are fortresses in your life, when there are walls in your life that seem to be insurmountable because they needed to take this country, they needed to take this promised land, and it seemed that there was an absolutely insurmountable obstacle in their way. A smart man, a military strategist, would have said, no way, let's walk away. But it wasn't based on military strategy. Can't you just see, if you're thinking about this in normal terms, Kenny Rogers has a line that fits that, doesn't he? You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them. There are battles you have to walk away from. There are just times you have to turn around because we can't win this one. And yet they did. And it says, by faith, the walls fell. First, it is an absolutely dependent faith. That's what's necessary for every one of us. We need to have a faith that is absolutely and totally dependent. God says in Proverbs chapter 3, And he makes statements that are similar in other places. But he tells us, lean not on your own understanding. Don't think to yourself, how is this going to work? Why is this going to work? One of the most difficult things about the nature of faith is the absolute trust that God is looking for in our lives. I just have to believe there were no Israelites that felt secure in the plan. But there were that felt secure in their God of the plan. And we don't understand how he's going to work. He says, my ways are not your ways. Don't debate my ways. Don't argue my ways. Trust me when I tell you. Are you willing to put into effect the things that God says? That's what he's asking us. Are you willing to have that absolute trust in God? We understand the nature of that. I have no idea what the chemical composition is of a tiny little yellow pill that I take every single day of my life. I don't know. I don't know. Should I find out what the composition is? Is that what's most important? I had half of a thyroid removed back in about 2010 because of some issues with the thyroid, and the doctor prescribed a little yellow pill called Synthroid. And I take it every single day because he says, this will replace what that half of your thyroid was doing. And I trust my doctor. That may not always be the case, but I trust this doctor. I trusted this man when he made this prescribed treatment for me. And so since 2010, I've taken one of those little yellow pills every single day, strictly based on trust. It is dependent. I trust that he knows what I don't know because he is in a different position than I am. And that's what God is saying. You're going to have to trust me. I'm not like you. I'm different than you. Trust me. That's why Ephesians 3 says he's able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. He says, just, I'm telling you, trust me. Forget your role and think in terms of my role. I liked one guy. He said, we sometimes are trying to create the waves in the ocean. He was talking about a surfer's description. And says we're trying to make the waves. And he said, God makes the waves. All he's asking us to do is get on and ride them. And I think that's true. He's saying, if I'll just understand, he'll take care of doing his part if I'll just come along. And that's why he tells us the weapons of our warfare aren't like regular weapons. They're spiritual. We need to have an absolutely dependent faith. Secondly, we have to have an active faith. He said, see, I've given it to you. I mean, God could have said of Jericho, could he not? Hey, guys, just sit back. Behold, you're about to see something incredible. You just sit comfortably in camp and you watch me wipe out the city of Jericho for you. He could have said that. He could have done that, but he didn't. Because God needs us to be active in our trust. And that's why in James chapter 2, when he talks about faith and he talks about the idea of works, you don't do anything with your faith. He asks that question. Can that faith, not can faith save him? He says, can that faith, a faith that does nothing, can that faith save him? It can't. It needs to be an active faith. Can I have a faith that just trusts that God said to do this and to get up and do it? I tell you, it's embarrassing sometimes to think that I have a doctor who says, take the pill every day, and I take the pill every day without question. And yet we're a little more resistant sometimes when the God of all creation says, I'm telling you, just do this, and this will be the result. We need to have a faith that is active. Then we need to have an enduring faith. You ever wonder why they had to march around multiple times? Was that a destabilization technique? You know, if you march one day, I'm going to have a hard time shaking those walls down. We need to really do some march. If you're marching repeatedly, no, it's because God helps us to understand. Faith has to endure. Faith is over the long haul. Faith is built throughout time. As we are growing, we understand that faith takes a building on things. It takes suffering in life and to have faith. And because we have more faith, we may even go through more suffering and we have more faith. It's a process, and God intends that we follow that process, that we need to understand that grace and faith do not exclude action for us, and that we need to have a faith that absolutely endures. It's built over time, faith. I believe, Lord, help my unbelief. There was a missionary that used to, in the 1800s, was in China, by the name of J. Hudson Taylor. And he had some interesting statements. And I just leave you with one of his. As he was talking about the work in China in the 1800s and trying to take the gospel of Jesus Christ to the people that were there, he made a statement that said there are three stages in most great tasks undertaken for God. I just always loved this statement by this man. Three stages in most great tasks: impossible, difficult, done. That's what God wants us to understand. It may look insurmountable. Impossible, difficult, done. Have the faith to trust to do what God asks us to do. It says, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell. I'm confident there are times that God lets me sweat so that I will trust Him more deeply. The kind of faith that moves mountains, the kind of faith that causes walls to fall, is the kind of faith that is absolutely, totally trusting in God, totally God-dependent, not dependent on us. And because it's God-dependent, then it works. It gets up and does what God says to do. And it gets up and does what God says to do for as long as it takes to accomplish what God says to get accomplished. It's a dependent faith. It's an active faith. It's an enduring faith. The walls of Jericho fell because the Israelites trusted God so much that they took on a plan that seemed ridiculous and marched around the wall 7 different days. Not saying a word on 6 of them, and then on that 7th day, all those extra times around and blowing the horns and shouting because God said to. We need to trust. We need to be active. We need to endure. If you're not a Christian, nothing more important than that you place your faith in God. That you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And He says it's based on that belief that we would choose to turn and walk and follow Him. In class this morning, we got to see that in John. As you've got people just waiting for the Messiah and searching for the Messiah. And John the Baptist says, "Behold the Lamb of God." And some of those that were waiting for Him just did what? They just turned and they walked right behind Him, because that's what it means to have the faith and to trust God. When I believe that that's who He is, then I'll turn from my path toward His. That's the nature of repentance. And then I will choose to take up my cross and follow Him. To be buried like He was buried, but buried in baptism and raised in newness of life, so I can follow Him. For those of us that are Christians who have already taken those steps, faith is a challenge, and it continues to be a challenge. And God continues to build it as we continue to trust, as we continue to work and continue to endure. If we can help you somehow respond to God today, let us know while we stand and while we sing.